Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week we're going to talk about thanatology, the study of all things to do with human death and dying and grief. My guests are two people involved with thanatology. They are Suzanne Carthie and Dr. Lily Roslin. And good morning. Okay, let's see here. There we go. Try that again.
Good morning.
Okay. So, Suzanne is a faculty member and Lily is a student learning thanatology. So, let's talk about what's this all about. I think a lot of my listeners will not be familiar with this.
Thanatology actually is a broad field, as Annie said, the study of all things related to death and dying. We are particularly going to talk about one aspect of thanatology, which is music thanatology, and that is music applied to the death and dying process.
And why would people want to do that?
One reason is that in our Western culture, death had become very medicalized. Death had moved from a family event done at home with everybody taking part to a very medical setting in the hospital, set apart. People didn't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
So music is specifically addressing the need for making death more human, more a part of our lives, and also to relieve suffering at the end of life.
And so people can actually go to school and learn how to be a part of this process.
Yes. In 2007, Lane Community College graciously supported a group of us who wanted to start a training program here in Oregon. Lane is located in Eugene, but we have didactic sessions in Portland once a month, and then the rest of the study is basically an online study. So it's a hybrid course. Internships are located throughout the Northwest. So students can do a two-year study program with preparation for certification. And Lily is currently a student in that program.
So then once a month you go to Lane Community College?
No, I go to Portland. The classes are in Portland at St. Vincent's.
Okay. The classes are at St. Vincent's. Oh, okay. So you go up there.
Yeah.
And now, and what do you, at the end of the 2 years, what do you get?
You graduate from the training. You get a certificate of graduation from Lane, but it is a certification preparation program. So there is a professional certifying board, and upon completion of a course of study, then you can apply to that board for certification.
And is that a national board or a state board?
It's actually international. It's the Music Thanatology Association International. And more about this field is definitely available on their website, mtai.org.
Uh-huh. Okay. And and so then once a person has a certification, then what do they do?
Well, at this point, it is a new and growing field. So most of us who have been practicing music thanatology over the last 10 to 20 years have had to build our own practices in our own communities. We had 9 graduates from our first class, graduated in July 2009. All of them are either employed full-time or have part-time contracts in the communities where they come from.
So you're, primarily in a hospital or through hospice, or tell me how?
Both. My practice is an independent practice. I have contracts with a hospice in Portland and a hospice in Lincoln City. So currently right now I have the only practice on the Oregon coast of music thanatology. And our graduates are practicing in Salt Lake City, Spokane, Seattle, Ashland, Medford area. That's just the graduates from the 2009 class. But we have music thanatologists all over the world.
Okay, so Lily, so you're in the process.
I am.
And where are you in the 2 years?
Well, it started in January, and so I'm in month 5.
Oh, so you're a baby. You're starting over.
Yes, the learning curve is still pretty steep here.
Okay, and what kind of classes are there?
Well, quite a variety. There's kind of the basics of anatomy and physiology, but then I also am learning harp and voice. I studied harp for about a year before I applied to the program. And so there's quite a variety of classes, learning about prescriptive musicianship, which is really a new term of basically what a thanatologist does when they enter what's called a vigil, which is the space with the person who's dying, is to actually be able, through checking respiration and pulse and other signs, to actually go in without an agenda and make a decision about what would be therapeutically the best use of harp and voice in order to alleviate the suffering of that person.
Voices in talking or voices in singing?
Voices in singing. There's what's called thematic material. A lot of them are Gregorian chants, but it's there's this foundation of music that I'll be learning for the 2 years.
Wow, that sounds really fun.
It is.
Okay, and okay, so if someone gets out of this program, then they have to find somebody. I mean, like if you're in a big area like Portland, Eugene, Salem, you might be able to go to the hospital and say, "I have this degree. Would you like my services?" And maybe you have somebody who's never heard of thanatology. They might say, "I don't know what you're talking about."
Yeah, many of us have worked quite a bit to build practices here, specifically in Oregon. But one thing about Oregon is that we have more practicing music thanatologists than any place else in the world. And part of that is because of Oregon's right to die law and the whole attention to palliative care, which is to ease suffering at the end of life, and end-of-life care has really improved greatly here. And so alternative modalities such as music thanatology have been welcomed here. So many times there is interest and knowledge in a community, and when someone comes along who says, "I can do this," a community will gather together mm-hmm. to support it.
And so if a person's in hospice care, do all the hospice volunteers, staff, are they aware that this might be or that this could be available for people to, like, it's when they're going through with the family or the caregiver and saying, okay, these are the things that that are available, like we can send someone in once a week to give you a rest so you can go shopping or whatever, and you could have someone come and play music and sing to your loved one. Mm-hmm. Is that, are they told that as one of the options?
Yes, the hospices that I have contracts with do that. It's just kind of on a grocery list of things that they offer to patients when they're admitted. But also the nurses, the social workers, the bath aides, any of the hospice workers or volunteers can recommend it to the patient and their family, or recommend the patient and family to the services, and then someone would follow through and try to connect. Mm-hmm. It has become a real standard of care in Portland. All the hospitals and all the hospices in the area do have music thanatology available to their patients.
So then like everything else, it'll have to drip out to the rest of the more rural communities.
Yes, but Oregon is very ripe, and I've been practicing in Lincoln City now since 2003, and it is a standard of care there. And
in the hospital?
With the hospice service, and any patients in the hospital who are on hospice have this service available.
So then the hospital in general knows because you guys are there.
Yes.
And there's no hostility, like, "What are you doing here?"
No.
We don't need a harp in the hospital. Go away.
Now, that may have been true 15 years ago, but actually my mother died in New Jersey in 2000, and even though the staff had never heard of music thanatology, I was with her the last 10 days of her life. And by the time she died, the staff was just, why don't you move here? We want this. We need this. Very often the staff is very supportive because the music soothes and calms them as well as the patient. So once people know what it is and find out that we are not there just to play pretty music, that we are there as a therapeutic modality, and they see the change that it makes in the comfort level of patients, we're welcomed.
Okay, so when did this whole idea come? Where did it come from?
The founder of the whole field of music thanatology is Therese Schroeder Schieker. She was a graduate student in music in Denver, Colorado, in the late 60s, early 70s, and worked in a nursing home to pay her bills. Was very disturbed by how people who were dying were treated. And they were just moved out of beds quickly so another person could be put in there. The whole goal was to get them out the door, dead and out the door. She began singing Gregorian chant to them, and just because that's what she knew. And she also was a harpist. And so through that experience, she created the field of music thanatology. She was based at Regis University in Denver until 1992, when she was invited to Missoula, Montana, to Providence St. Patrick's Hospital, and had a clinically based program there for 10 years. That school closed in 2002, and so there was a gap because we had a growing field, a limited number of music thanatologists practicing worldwide, and so that was the impetus to start the school in Oregon.
And there must be other schools in other places.
This is the only formalized college-level program. The Chalice of Repose Project, which was Therese Schroeder Schieker's school based in the hospital in Missoula, is an ongoing project, and you can find those on the web. Mm-hmm. Therese is doing some training of music thanatologists also.
So then in thanatology, you're learning singing and harp, both?
Yes.
Yeah? How fun. And then what else besides, you said anatomy and...
Yeah, well, it's really a whole integrative process because music thanatology is, there's a contemplative part of what we do. And so it's all very integrated into the spiritual realm as well, so that it's not just performing, but it's really more therapeutic and... you know, and it's really a comprehensive process.
It's some meditation?
Well, it's basically, you know, it's encouraged that all of us have some kind of contemplative process, mm-hmm. because we're dealing with people who are dying. Mm-hmm. And that's a challenge for a lot of us.
So it sounds like part of what people are learning is how to be quiet in themselves and listen to someone else.
Definitely. How to be present to somebody. The presence to somebody. The difference between us and, say, a talk relationship is that we express our presence through music.
Mm-hmm. Rather than blah, blah, blah.
Rather than talking. there is a very big component of listening in silence. Uh-huh. But rather than say, a talk therapy, mm-hmm. we offer music.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's hear some of that music. Suzanne has wonderfully brought a harp in here, and let's have some harp. Thank you. That was beautiful. You were just listening to the harp played by Suzanne Carthy, and we are talking about music thanatology. You know, there aren't that many words in the English language that are Greek, and thanatology is a Greek word. You know, we're mostly Latin-based, and when people come across Greek words, it always is a little jarring because it's not the usual. So, Thanos?
Thanatos was the Greek god of death.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay. And then ology is like the study,
study of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the study mm-hmm. of death. So that, yeah. that may, I mean, most of the Greek words in, are that easy to translate, but you have to know what it means.
Right.
Okay. So, was that a song?
That was a Gregorian chant. It was actually a Kyrie from the Mass of the Angels, which was typically sung in the Middle Ages at Christmas time. And a lot of our music dates back from the hospice practices of the Middle Ages, specifically the monastery at Cluny in France, where their relationship to the divine was through art and music. The pursuit of beauty was a huge aspect of their whole practice. And so they gathered people in who were dying, and their rituals at death were recorded in great detail. Some of this music was restored in the 19th century, and so we've tapped into that source. But this, I have to say, is just a basic thematic material, as Lily mentioned, that is not in and of itself what the music is about. It's really about taking themes in music and applying them specifically in the moment to a situation with a patient.
Okay, so we had a caller who would like to hear some singing with the music.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Deus meus. Okay. We'll sing a Celtic prayer. It's called Deus meus. The three tenors recorded it, so it may sound familiar. And the basic translation is, God help me. Deus meus, ad humam me.
That's beautiful. So, Lily, how hard is it to learn to play the harp?
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
It's quite an incredible instrument, though, because you have to be relaxed, you have to be grounded, you need to be centered, and so all that is a really good thing.
And how about the vocal training?
Well, what we're learning is a specific kind of vocal technique where the breath really supports you as you sing, and with actually very little effort, and so that the voice is clear.
Actually, I think that all vocal training starts with that. You got to have good breath support, or you'll run out of air.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I know that when my daughter was taking voice lessons, and I would sit in when she was younger, that was always, you know, you don't have enough breath. You don't have enough support. You can't do that note unless you get better breath support. So that's kind of universal. And okay, so you don't have any music here. So it means you have it memorized.
Well, that's because the point is not performance at the bedside. The point is communication and communion in one sense with the patient, wherever they are in their suffering with music. And so it's really not about the score on the page. It's mm-hmm. not really about these specific notes. We prescribe with musical elements. So in other words, we may choose whether to have a major or a minor key or tuning. We may choose to use the upper range of the harp or the lower range or a combination. Very simple is often the very best thing. And so the basic shared material that we have really is just a starting point for what we do at the bedside.
So the voice could just be la, la, la.
Absolutely.
Right? It wouldn't
yeah.
have to be, or humming.
Toning on vowels. And I really want to say, too, that our work is non-sectarian. Although much of the music arose out of that medieval monastic tradition, Gregorian chant, as everyone knows, in the 70s just kind of burst out of any specific
became
creed.
Very cool.
And yeah, anybody who's experienced it knows that it touches the soul deeply. And so our music is not particularly offered within a specific spiritual tradition, and in our own practices, we each have our own. So it's not offered in the same sense that it would be, say, in a Catholic Mass, mm-hmm. but the spirit of the music comes through in a very broad, deep way that touches people in their humanness.
Well, also, if it's in Latin, you were singing in Latin, right?
We were singing in, that's called a Macaronic hymn, which is a combination of Latin and Gaelic.
Oh, okay. Well, most people aren't familiar with either of those languages,
right.
So then it becomes more like it's just the melody. You focus on the melody right. because you don't know the words.
Yeah, and one reason for that is that familiar music takes people back to a specific time mm-hmm. in their life, and it's not that that would never be appropriate at the bedside, but we're helping people face this incredible transition to the unknown. And so often they need to leave the familiar behind. And music can be safe and be unfamiliar and help in that journey. And so much of the music that we use is intentionally unfamiliar to people.
It's lovely. Maybe we should do a little bit more. Can we have a little more music
sure.
with singing?
Sure.
That'd be great. All right.
A quartet? Okay. Apporta in veri, erua Domine, anima meam. Apporta in
That is beautiful. If you're just joining us, you've been listening to Harp and Voice with Dr. Lily Roslin and certified music thanatologist Suzanne Carthy. And Lily, can you tell me where did your interest in thanatology come from?
Well, the last couple of years I had five people in my life pass. And I had a very dear friend who was in a hospice in Portland at Hopewell House. And one of the thanatologists that works there came in. And I was just so deeply moved. And I was encouraged by my friend to start learning the harp. And so that's when the journey began. And I started taking harp. And I was told that it would take at least a year for me to get proficient enough to start the program. So that's what I did. And so I've been on this road since then.
And are you still practicing chiropractic?
I am. I'm juggling.
So you go between Tillamook and Portland?
And then I'll be starting an internship in Lincoln City.
Oh, wow. And then you'll have three places that you have to go?
That's right.
Of course, you like Portland anyway.
That's right.
That sounds wild. And so for 2 years, so you're like in a year and a half. You'll be done with the school part?
Right.
Okay. And then Is there a board certification?
Yes, there is. Students who graduate from a program or a training can apply then to the certification board of the Music Thanatology Association.
And the advantage of that over just saying, well, I just completed this program, take me?
Well, there are many people who play the harp and sing beautifully and who would like to work in hospice care. And actually, there are many levels that people can do that. Just taking a harp into the hospital lobby and playing can calm everybody. But we're really trying to build this as a professional field and really stressing to institutions that they hire certified music thanatologists. There's just a certain level of preparation and quality to the work that then is hopefully guaranteed by that process.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add, Lily?
Just that it's quite a learning process, and I'm very, very excited about doing this work. I have, I'm hoping to play this for a long time.
It's so incredible. It's very neat. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
All the practitioners of music thanatology worldwide are listed with name and contact information and location at the Music Thanatology Association website. So that's mtai.org. So I can be reached through that.
Okay.
Also, I would like to let people know that the first book about music thanatology was just published this month in May. It's called Music at the End of Life by Jennifer Hollis, and it is just coming out in bookstores. It is available at Amazon.com, but it's just coming out, and it's a wonderful, definitive story of music thanatology.
That is great. Okay, now how about something more immediate, like somebody wants to call you?
Okay, have them go to the MTI website, and the best way to reach me is through email, so they can email me through that website.
Great, okay.
Also, Lane Community College does have information about our training on their website, too.
Oh, and at Lane Community College at EDU something like that.
Yes, LCC.edu.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Or Lane.
Okay.
CC. Great. .edu.
Great. Yeah. So, Lily, where do you think you'll be doing thanatology?
I'm not sure. I'm going to kind of see how things unfold.
You know, I could see you in a hospital doing sort of a blend. You know, now that everything is opening up in the field and everyone wants to work together and it's all so harmonious, I could see you could treat one patient over here with a back problem and then come over here and play the harp over.
Right? It's a possibility.
It sounds very harmonious to me. Oh, this has been great.
Let me give you my email address, too. I'd be happy for people to email me directly.
Awesome.
It's cerddeu@yahoo.com.
That's great. And if that doesn't make any sense for that's what you get for Welsh, I guess.
Yes, Caerth is the Welsh word for music, and Caerthi is the inspiration for music and poetry. So it's a name I'm hoping to live into at some point in this lifetime.
That sounds great. Okay, well, my guests have been Suzanne, Caerthi, and certified music thanatologist, and Lily Roslin, who's a chiropractic physician who is a student of music thanatology. Thank you both for joining me. Mm-hmm.